Welcome to Risky Business, a show where we get to explore new and innovative ways to understand and reduce risk by bringing together some of the leading professionals in the transportation and the insurance industry. My name is Scott Grandis. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's kick it off. Welcome to Risky Business. This is where we take a look at insurance and commercial trucking risk at all different levels. And I have a very good friend of mine for many, many years now. I don't know what it is, Mark. It's probably 20 or over.
A lot of years.
A lot of years. So we've got Mark Tuckman, who is the CEO of TIP National, who is very heavily involved in the trucking industry and commercial truck insurance. And we're going to talk today about what Mark sees out on the road and what he sees every single day in this crazy industry we call trucking and insurance. So welcome to the show, Mark. Glad to have you here. Why don't you maybe tell us a little bit more about what you do and what you see?
Well, first, I gotta say I love the logo and the business, and actually you look pretty handsome. So,
well, thank you.
It's cool. It's I don't know who did the truck and the eyeglass there, but that's pretty slick. So
that was Zoe's idea, and then,
I love it.
I'm always wearing sunglasses, so you know in the logo they kept the sunglasses, and Zoe's like, you should put trucks in the sunglasses.
Yeah, no, that's good little quality.
Well, thank you.
The Zoe Master. So
the Zoe Master.
Well, good. So what was the question again?
Well, tell us more about TIP and what TIP does, and then I'm dying to jump into I'm going to show my mug in a minute because I love when you talk about what's going on in the industry.
Yeah, I think I love that mug too. Yeah, TIP, and it's funny. We obviously create trucking programs and all programs for the transportation industry, but I think we like to think of ourselves more as insurance is that last thing or value we're adding, and so more about what safety and compliance and all the other pieces that we help insureds with on the, you know, to prevent them from using insurance as a risk mitigator. So, but TIP, I mean, we do anything from a car all the way up to tractor trailer in all the different programs. So, but we ultimately want to diversify and do a lot more than just wheels. But today it's wheels, kind of just like where we met. So
yeah, wheels. Yeah. That was so long ago. I can't believe it. Can't believe it's been this long. I feel like I have an age, but when I get out of bed every morning, I can definitely feel that I've aged.
No, I refuse to change my LinkedIn photo, so you could see what it did. So, and I didn't change purposely today, just so I can look a little gruffy, so we can really talk freely.
Well, when you look at mine from like my LinkedIn one, my hair actually has color. Now it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, mine just doesn't have hair, so.
Well, yeah, same hair. good stuff. Well, hey, listen, talk about, so one of the things, you sent me a couple slides, which I thought were awesome and scary at the same time. So I pulled a couple of things off of them. And the first one I pulled was that you're seeing increased premiums, which is good, right? But you're also seeing increased losses. What's happening there? How's that happening, do you think?
Well, I think we were seeing increased premiums. So, and for all you truckers out there that are going to listen to this, you're probably going to be like, we pay too much already. But the problem is that losses and you have all the different factors. And one of the slides I sent you in there was just kind of the perfect storm. And so you got interest rates and inflation and fuel and all these different things that are going up. And premiums were going up as well, but they were needed to go up. I mean, a lot of people think that the insurance industry makes so much money, but at the end of the day, when you're looking at 100-something% loss ratio combined, they're not really making money, right? So, or they could be making more money if they did more of the right things in some cases, but that doesn't help the trucker. And I think so you see a lot of the premiums now have peaked. And so that's good for the trucker in some respects. But the problem is also, though, that you're also seeing their freight rates that were going up and up and up and up. Now you got about 30% or so over capacity in the trucking space. So too many trucks, not enough freight. Rates are dropping. You're seeing the spot market, which a lot of these guys live off of, that now you're seeing these sub $2 per mile rates or whatever it is, which that's not helping anybody except the shippers are happy, right? So, but I think that's kind of the quandary that the industry is finding itself in. And one of those slides I sent you is kind of the players that were in the space in, you know, 3 years ago. I mean, you probably have double, maybe triple the amount of options. So,
yeah. So that was one of the things that I was putting here. So you put new insurance providers and then returning insurance providers. So one of we've taught me a lot about insurance over the last few years here. And one of the things that
we learned together, my friend,
we did. But if you go back, remember is it 3 or 4 years ago when we saw a bunch of programs just kind of tanking? Everybody was backing out of the industry and the programs are blowing up and all this stuff. And then TIP had a program in the right spot at the right time and everything was going great. Are these the same players that were in the market before, blew things up, and now they're coming back and they're going to do it again? Like, is this the next part of the cycle here?
Some have renamed themselves, come back in a different form. some just come back in. And I think what you saw was, when there's, and it's supply and demand, right? So when there's not enough supply, then rates are going to rise. But now rates rose to a point where it was attractive again, right? You forgot about the pain that you felt, but now you're going, hey, instead of getting $8,000, I can get $16,000. Let's get back in the mix. But you didn't fix the problem.
Yeah.
And the problem, I think, has different faces. It has different parts that might be broken or need to be fixed. But I think in the end, I think when you drill all the way down, and you and I talk about this a lot, it's the driver. Okay. We need to help the driver. We need to educate the driver. We need to help them, you know, be better at what they're doing. And I think in the 5 or 6 years, that we've been doing this, it is absolutely apparent to me the biggest thing missing is education and communication. I think the insured, the driver want to do the right thing. They just aren't being told to do the right thing. And I think when we look at the supply chain in the insurance space, I think the biggest element that we see that's broken is the retail agent. Yeah. I don't think that communication and education is getting down to the driver. Might be getting to the insured, but it's not getting to the driver.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you know, we deal with these agents too all the time. And, you know, I think there are some really good operators out there that really, really want to do the right thing for the trucking company. But I think there's a lot that they just want to get the premium, they want to get the commission, and they want to move on to the next one. And I think that's the tough part. And especially, so I pulled up a couple of other stats, and I think it plays perfectly into this. So the OIDA, right? Now, this goes back to December of 2020, and this might actually have something to do with, you were just talking about the freight volumes were up, the spot rates were up, and now you're starting to see them drop. And so OIDA back in 2020, December, said there was 584,437 for-hire motor carriers, 502,626 were less than 6 units, and then another 53,000 were less than 20 units. But the U.S. Department of Transportation in June of this year said that there were 1.1 million for-hire motor carriers. Is it possible that there were 400,000 motor carriers that came into the market in the last 2 years?
Well, you saw a lot of different things. You saw a lot of these guys that were leased on now that were getting pushed in to get their own authority. Mm-hmm. I think AB5 in California was one of the parts of that, where, you know, that was the strategy. It's like, instead of having 50, 100, 200 guys leased on, everybody then were getting their own authority. So you saw, you know, that huge influx, I think, in people getting their own authority. But I think also there's a lot of people that file and get their authority, but then never activate it. So I'm not sure if those are in those numbers as well. But
I wonder what that stat is. That'd be interesting to see.
Well, we see, you know, if we're getting 700-800 submissions a month, probably about 20-something% of those never get authority. They never get a filing. You know, they have their DOT active. They have their all of that, but then they never get insurance and never get their, that's never turned active. So that's a big stat. But, you know, and you mentioned the returning guys and the new people coming into the industry, which is, you know, I think the landscape of that segment of when you look at the less than six trucks, which when you think of OIDA, that's their target, right? That's their bread. Yeah. That's their swing. So that's a big part of the market, obviously.
Well, yeah, if you look at, so 53,000, so you got about 560,000 out of the 584,000 that OIDA reported are less than 20 units. And, you know, kind of back to what you were just saying about the education, I think that's a huge part of the problem. Do these fleets even know what they have to look at? Do they know what insurers are looking at? Do they know what it means to be underwritten? Like, I think those are essential things that are being missed. And
yeah, I have to agree with you. Do they have the wherewithal? You know, the bigger fleet has the safety manager, has those recurring meetings and things to drive safety and drive new and think about it. Look at all the different products that are now available. I mean, the iPhone is a great example. The power in that little phone compared to what we had 20, 30 years ago when we were young and good looking. It's amazing. So you could do more now with just that phone than it's like we used to have to go out and get encyclopedias and look things up. Now you just type in Google and boom. If I had all that, I would have been an A student far before I was 20 something years old. So
yeah, it's crazy. You know, even going all the way back to my previous life when I first started to get into trucking. And I saw all the data that these fleets have to track, and it's all over the place, right? It's all over the map. You got a one site for this, and another site for that, another site for this, another one over here. It's crazy. I don't know how these small fleets would keep up. I mean, I think that's one of the critical parts. I don't think they get enough information. I don't think they get enough good information the right way.
Well, and you know the word I'm going to use. It's easy. If you can make it easy and you can actually show them the value and the benefit of it, then they're going to use it. But I forgot who said this to me. I think it was yesterday before. It's like, these guys are truckers, man. They want to drive. They don't want to do all that stuff. So you got to make it where if it's not self-service or simple, it's got to be pretty close. But if you could do that, and hey, listen, we want to get them home at night. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think there's anything in our program that we're asking for that isn't required by the DOT or things that they should be doing. And so if they take that and use it and really follow what our underwriting guidelines are, and you know, listen, I had a good conversation with Joe Freed the other day about underwriting guidelines and things like that.
Yeah.
And you look at the plaintiff's bar and you look at the defense. We're not far apart. We all want the same thing because if they do the right thing and they're really embracing that, it's going to benefit them, right? Instead of cutting the corner and you know, not doing maintenance and not doing all those things, you know, and you know, I mean, you slow down 5 miles per hour, that's going to save you a bunch of money as well. So it all adds up to, you know, safer roads, safer drivers that are in those trucks is going to equate to lower premiums, lower expenses, all those things, you know. So I don't think we're all far apart in what we're asking for. I think it's just how we get there, and education and communication is absolutely one of the big pieces.
So now I'm going to ask a big question.
Oh shit.
So I know you look at the, you know, all those submissions that you guys quote on, and then some that you decline, right? Because they don't fit. So how are those folks getting insured? And this is where, now before you say that, I'm gonna say it afterwards. Go ahead.
Well, the problem is should they? It's Yeah. I mean, there's always somebody out there who's going to write. It's just a question on how much, right? So, and we all have our different business models, and is one right, one wrong? I'm not going to make that call. I know for me, I got into this industry because I saw an opportunity to help and make things better. I mean, when I was on the trucking side and you know, we had what, 3,000-4,000 guys that you helped manage and do all that in our previous lives. I was at a point in my career and what I want to do is I just didn't want to, like I said earlier, sell insurance. I wanted to help people. And in doing so, that is where the precipitous of the whole program came from. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, if we can help them, if we can educate them, a lot of those characters that maybe would be deemed bad characters or bad actors, uh-huh. we can help them be better and actually be able to get insurance without having to go to the pool or some of the other markets that is costing them so much money. But I think the underwriting process and doing the right thing, it really isn't that hard. So the problem is there are a lot of carriers that you're entering it online, you're getting your quote, you're binding it, and nothing really happens that should happen to really vet and put the driver on the road. So they're out there, you know, I call it underwriting happens afterwards.
Yeah.
So then you usually see the rates rise, the cancellation happen because they're underwriting after the fact instead of before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talk about scheduled driver policies, scheduled vehicle policies. I absolutely 100% feel that every single driver needs to be scheduled on a policy. And people, you know, not because we don't want to provide coverage, because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't be putting the driver on the road until he went through all the vetting, all of that. And to then endorse him on the policy, that takes seconds. So,
right.
So, you know, a lot of people, they don't want to do that because they think that, that they should get any auto or all of that. It's just not right.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we see it too when we're handling that stuff, you know. We see folks that get upset because the driver has some sort of a criminal history and they think it's okay to put them in a truck. And it's like, you know, you look at these lawsuits and whatnot, what's going on. But then to see that other people are just letting drivers on, that leads to my mug, right? Here we go.
Hold on. So you got to get
it in the light, right? There you go. Yeah, let's keep the dumb fuckery to a minimum.
Oh. God. Well, it's not even a dumb fuck. Sorry for all you children out there. Don't let them listen. Some people are just dumb. It's the ones that are purposely,
yeah,
you know, out there, you know, putting someone on the road that shouldn't be on the road. It's the guy that's pushing the driver to drive over right. hours and do all the things that shouldn't be happening. So those aren't dumb fucks. Those are the bad actors, right?
So, do you remember when we first launched the telematics? It was one of the first companies that came on. You guys that found it, sent it over to get them hooked up. And I think it was a fleet of four or six trucks, and they were all 1999s. And so he goes, well, we don't have ELDs. We don't need to have them. And I said, okay, well, we're gonna ship out some hardware to install in the truck. And he's like, I'm not putting that stuff in my truck.
Yeah.
So that should be, you know, the risk scoring methodology, all 1999s should be a very high risk because they're playing Smokey and the Bandit.
Well, yeah, they're hiding it. And you can, you know, I mean, there's too many stories to tell, but you know, you got the mystery fleet. You know, we rode all the Freightliners, but he had a whole fleet of Peterbilts. I don't know if you remember that one. And so, you know, you talk about safety on the road, you talk about, I mean, that right there is a bad actor where they purposely, you know, had that equipment and drivers on the road that weren't, you know, covered. And, you know, everybody likes to think about the insurance companies are making all the money. Well, how about all the premium that doesn't get collected? And so, you know, you look at those loss ratios and you look at the industry and how it operates, but there is so much money that's not being collected from premium because it's undervalued. There's so much money that's not being collected because it's just not you know, that vehicle isn't on the policy. And you know, I got 20 Freightliners and I got 10, right? You see it when you connect.
Yeah. You know,
so now that we can connect without having put an equipment in the truck to the ELD,
oh,
boom,
yeah.
The lights on. Right, and you just see all of those little maggots running, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but the good news, and I don't want to be, you know, critical and negative, those are the minority of what's out there. I think the majority, going back to education and communication, they want to do the right thing. They just need help. And yeah. I think for the retail agents that are listening here, that's your job. You know, mm-hmm. If you look at what the commission structure is, you know, most of the retail agents are making a lot more money than anybody else in the chain, a lot mm-hmm. more, right? So, yeah. So at the end of the day, if the insurance company is running at 110, they're losing money. If they're running at 80 or 90, maybe they're making a couple bucks, but you look at the retail side of it, you're getting 9-10%, right?
Right.
With no risk.
Right.
So you got to do the job that you're collecting that commission for. And that is really educating and communicating and helping your insured. That's your customer. That's your agents.
I agree. You know, so I just got back from a trip, right? Visiting with an agency, and I probably heard one of the best things that I'd heard from an agency, might be ever, but at least in a long time. And he made a comment and he said, you know, we need to teach these fleets that the insurance company is not, they're not the big bad insurance company just trying to come get your money. It's a partnership, right? It's a partnership that says, you need to understand what are the things that are looking at, understand how you control those things that they're looking at. And then they can offer you better rates or lower deductibles or what have you. But I think what you said a couple times here that makes total sense, and I think this is the perception out there, is, oh man, I can't pay all this money in insurance. All they're doing is taking money out of my pocket. No, that's not the way it works. You know, it's, and I heard this in London a few times and it's rung a bell in my head forever. And it's that insurance is a contract, right? It's a contract that says, I'm going to insure you at this rate for this period of time, based on what you told me and the way you're operating. And so if what you told and how they're operating is incorrect, the contract is incorrect, but it's a business partnership, right?
Well, yeah. Well, and this is another conversation that we have a lot, is what we underwrite. Is that actually what's happening after the fact? So I underwrite a fleet of Freightliners. I underwrote the 10 drivers that went with those Freightliners. And, mm-hmm. and you know this better than anybody, that changes.
Okay.
It changes. Look at the turnover in the industry. So what was underwritten in June is usually different than what's on the road in October, right? So, mm-hmm. so you, and it is a contract. It's an agreement. And it should be a partnership. Some of my best days are the days when an agent asks me to get on the phone with an insured and really talk to them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's where you can really help them understand what we're doing and how we're doing it and why we're doing it. So that's, I think, you know, the insurance companies and even some of the big, bad, ugly ones that people talk bad about, they get on the phone with the insured. They talk to the insured.
Yeah.
You know, they might be doing it for different reasons. We're doing it to help them, to make them better, you know, understand what they're doing. I think that's really where, and that's how our relationship with London and our reinsurers have come to pass, is because, you know what? We took the time when I was an insured and I had 3,000-4,000 drivers, going over and educating them, telling them what we're doing, and them telling me how they look at risk, why all those different pieces of the puzzle that a lot of people just don't understand.
Yeah. Now, what do you think if the losses are going up, and what do you think the likelihood of the FMCSA pushing through this $750,000 to $2 million liability structure is? I mean, they've been talking about it for a while. Do you think it's...
Well, my view is it probably needs to go up.
Maybe.
Most people won't say that, but... I mean, look at inflation. Look at, well, when it was put in place and it was 750 years and years and years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at just what that is today. I mean, just for that reason alone. But I think at the end of the day, when something really goes wrong, is that enough anyway, right? So you're blowing through that in an accident, whether it's you know, a real damages or things like that. But, you know, you look at the nuclear verdicts, you look at all the different things. So I think politically, right, and I'm not going to get into politics, but look what happened to the rail strike, right? Congress, you know, said we're going to avert this rail strike because it'll just bring the country to its knees. Right. You're moving these limits up, and you have to think about the reinsurance or the people behind what's going to put that limit out there. Uh-huh. They're going to put their money elsewhere, right? I mean, and that's the thing where when rates started rising and all these people came back into the market, they did so because it was attractive and they can make money. So if they got to put out $2 million limits versus $750, you're going to see a lot of those people exit, which probably isn't a bad thing. There's too many people in the market anyway. But listen, the big guys are just going to get bigger. You look at any of the big boys running down the road, you know, the Swifts, the Werners, the Schneiders, they embrace that $2 million limit because they already got it.
Well, yeah. Right?
So it doesn't mean anything for them. It's going to kill the 85% of the little guy. Well, and so with freight rates being where they're at, with inflation, with all the things that are out there, you know, that's why you're seeing these guys park. I mean, the cancellation rate right now is horrific. Yeah. You're seeing, you know, there was one in Iowa that shut the doors earlier this week, but the little guy is getting out. They're either leasing back on or they're just getting out of business and saying, hey, minimum wage is going up. I'm just going to go work at McDonald's. Why am I going to be away from my family in the sleeper doing all that? And I can make $700-$800, you know, not out, you know, being gone for 2 weeks at a time or whatever. So it's definitely going to be an interesting 2023. You know, headwinds, you know, this industry is going to, not just the trucking, the insurance on the commercial auto side, it's definitely going to be interesting. A lot of hurdles to get over in the first half of 2023.
Yeah. And when you think, like, when you talk about those small fleets, like the numbers are staggering, even just that stuff I talked about earlier. So the percentage wise, this was trucking.org on U.S. Department of Transportation. June 2022, so 95.7% of for hire motor carriers are 10 or fewer trucks. 99.7% all motor carriers have less than 100 trucks. So those big ones you're talking about that are going to gobble up, it's 0.3% of the market that's going to gobble things up.
It's, well, you look at the fragmentation in the industry, and that's, you know, when you look at like private equity and money coming in, that's an opportunity, right? But it's really, and I've been there, it's really hard to consolidate and do all that, right? So, and really, I think it goes down to the culture and driving that in the organization. And it all comes down to, again, communication, right? So that's where we all fall down. It's, you know, with anything. So when you have a little company and a little thing, you can drive it quick and fast. As it gets bigger, then that's really where you got to be on your game, and technology is a big part of that, mm-hmm. you know. So, but it's not the end all. It really comes down to the person behind it, and so you know, I was on a call earlier today. They had a yes and a no button, and he would say to the people that came in his office, "Here, just hit the button. We'll see which one says yes or no." Well, he took the batteries out of the yes button, so. It was no. So, you know, but, and I think, you know, you kind of hit on something before with the backgrounds and some of the people that are in the industry that maybe wouldn't qualify for maybe our program or whatever. But, you know, we're not cut and dry. We make exceptions all the time. If it's the right situation and if it's the person that needs a second chance, but there's a lot of people out there that need second chances, whether they're the truck owners, whether it's a driver. And you can do that if you have the visibility, if you have the technology and way to manage it and hold people accountable. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, I have 4 kids, 2 grandkids now. Boundaries are necessary. Right? Rules, rules aren't made to be broken per se, which, hey, listen, I broke a lot of rules over my life and career. I think I learned an awful lot from a lot of those bad situations that you find yourself in. So, but you need those boundaries. I mean, it's absolutely necessary. And it's the same for the driver, same for the trucking company. They need the boundaries, but they also need the help to get through it. So,
yeah. Well, listen, we're almost at Christmas here. So, now that it's this time of year, the question that I have for you is, if you could have one Christmas present for the industry, for yourself, for the industry, for insurance, trucking, what would you ask for from Santa?
Oh, selfishly?
Yeah.
All these fuckers to get out of the business. that don't know
which
what
is why this
doing.
Mug was perfect.
that would be number one. No, in all honesty, I think. And really, I think it goes back to why I got into the business. I really got into to make it better and help. And so, competition and you always need, there's different people that have different risk tolerances, different business practices or ways that they think, some treat it with premium, some treat it with education and training and all those things. But at the end of the day, you want to get to that, profitable result. And for me and a lot of the people that got me into this side of the business, they were all some people that really bet on me and I feel and always will loyal and really want to protect them. So you got to protect your market. You got to protect your reinsurer. Mm-hmm. And so that starts with the driver. So, I mean, my first wish in all honesty is I wish I could just help people much easier, give them the tools and really make things better. And if all that happens, if you think about it, we all win, right? You got the insured that is going to get his drivers home at night. He's going to be safer. His premiums are ultimately going to be lower. You got the retail agent that they're still going to get their slice of heaven, right? At least today, the way it is, which, I think maybe some of that needs to change. I don't have the answer for it. I don't know how it does change because they're the most important part of the puzzle for a lot of different reasons. But then myself, here, you say I'm an MGA, but ultimately I'm like the insurance company, right? The buck stops with me with whether we write something or we don't. But I need to protect those reinsurers that are betting on us. And so, if we all can do the right thing, everybody wins, right. And then that's where you see you're going to make money at it. You're not going to kill it, but I think everybody can exist and make money in the chain. So. Yeah. That's what I want for Christmas, Santa.
All right, I love it.
Oh,
love it. Awesome. Well, that reminds me of my favorite. I like to bring this one into these podcasts because it's one of my favorite lines. Movie Tommy Boy.
Yeah. Who's your favorite team?
Who's your favorite little rascal?
Right.
No, he's got a line there. He says, if you ain't growing, you're dying. There ain't no third direction, right? And I think that applies to this industry. We got to get better. We got to figure out how to grow and teach.
Well, it's great to get bigger and go up. It's really, really hard to go down,
Yeah.
So, I mean, you look at fixed costs and you look at variable costs. So, yep. I mean, anything that I've done in my career is I've always tried to keep things variable so that you can be fluid, and
right.
then you're making good decisions. You're not making, a lot of, unfortunately, players in this industry, they're just trying to put numbers on the board. They're trying to put premium in the books and not doing the hard work or doing the right work to really drive that value proposition in my eyes. So
always I'm trying to outrun the bear. At some point you get tired.
Yeah. Well, you build, And all of a sudden your overhead is so big and you gotta put the numbers on the board because you gotta feed the monster.
Yeah,
so, but if you're variable, then you can go up and down and still do the right thing. And that word no is, people say, hey, why do you guys do what you do and operate the way you do? It's because we say no. No.
Right, right. Love it.
Which is contrary to the model. Uh-huh. You know, when you get paid commission off of what you write, it's hard to say no.
Yeah. Got to say yes. So
yeah. That's the truth.
For sure. Well, cool. Well, listen, I think this was awesome. I love, I always love hearing your input. We talked all the time.
I only swore a couple times.
I was hoping for more. I was hoping for more. Yeah. Well, I appreciate the time. We're going to get this thing out and put it out there, and hopefully we can change some minds, change some lives. And at the end of the day, this is why I tell everybody with everything we're working on and what you're working on, it's just, you know, we're here to save lives. I mean, if all of this stuff that we do just saves one life or two lives, we probably will never know it, but it will work.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like anything, we only hear the bad things, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like the customer experience. People always tell you what's wrong instead of, hey, you know, not many say, hey, what a great job. What a, yeah, you know, they'll tell you the good things. So, but yeah, we absolutely want to save lives. I mean, that's it. So
for sure. All right. Well, listen,
thanks.
We'll talk soon. Be well. Peace. I hope you enjoyed our show today. Remember, when it comes to creativity and innovation, I always like to quote one of my favorite lines out of the movie Tommy Boy. If you ain't growing, you're dying. There ain't no third direction. My name's Scott Greendis. I'll see you on the next show.